The Positude Podcast, a one-hour show to bring joy, balance, and happiness to you and to negate the negativity in your life.
Gonna buy a radio station, play a little music on the air, spread a little love to the people out there. Gonna go out walking in the world, breathe a little clean fresh air. Find a place to offer up a silent prayer.
Welcome once again to the Positude Podcast. My name is Ira Robinson. As always, we are here with Maggie Hart. Hello, Maggie.
Hey, Ira. How you doing?
It's been a heck of a week, you know, but I'm getting by and I've been really looking forward to doing this show with you. How you been?
Been okay. Really, really busy. Halloween season kicked my butt, but a lot of spiritual warfare work. But other than that, I'm doing okay.
That's awesome.
I need more sleep.
Yeah, don't we all?
So jumping right into Sunny Stories this week. This one is actually about the singer John Legend. It's about he and his wife. And they went to the singer's hometown of Centerville, Ohio, with their daughter Luna and a few of their friends. And they had dinner at an Outback. And their server was 21-year-old Michaela Scott, who was very, very excited and nervous to wait on them. And she says, regarding John's wife, she walked in with all her glam, Michaela recalled. I was so nervous I was going to do something wrong. Coworkers insisted that Michaela was going to get a sizable tip, but she wasn't expecting anything more than the usual 20%. People kept saying, you're going to get a fat tip, Michaela said. But Chrissy delivered. She left the starstruck server with a 516% tip on a $193.81 bill. In total, Michaela earned an extra $1,000. Not too shabby for a day's work, huh? I was like, oh my God, praise the Lord, Michaela said. Chrissy ordered a list of appetizers, including the famous blooming onion and quesadilla. You have to take this away from me, Michaela recalls Chrissy saying. I'm going to eat it all. Chrissy is a known fan of Outback and even took a private lesson this year to learn how to make some of their signature appetizers. Michaela was very grateful for the tip, but not greedy. She shared some of her earnings with her coworkers and is using the rest to repair her car. It was an awesome experience, Michaela said. How cool is that, huh?
Yeah, it is. And you know, I like his music, number one. He's got pretty good music. But, when you see people like that, you know, the people that have ridden the fame train, they've got a lot of cash, you know, they've got a lot of fame and fans and that kind of thing. And yet they're still, you know, very much aware of the little guy, for want of a better word. You know, it's always awesome. It shows where they came from. You know, they're still tied to where they came from. And that's good.
Absolutely. I thought it was a very touching story, very cool story.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I've met a bunch of those people in the course of my life. And, you know, for the most part, they've been pretty decent. You know, they've been kind of down to earth people that you could conversate with on a normal level. You know, I have met some that are very uppity and, you know, are very stuck up and complain about everything.
Funnily enough, Maggie, the I've met ones that have been like internationally famous, and I've also met ones that are just mm-hmm. like locally famous. And it seems like the locally famous ones are always the ones to be more apt to be the pains in the butts. Let's just put it to you that way, than the ones that are the internationally famous ones. You know, it's really weird how that works.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you get that a lot. You know, they just want to be bigger than they actually are. And it's, you know, they think they're a big fish in a little pond kind of scenario.
Yep,
but,
yep.
You know, dealing with musicians for as many years as I did, you know, I have to say that I see that here and there, you know. I mean, but, you know, overall, I try and look at the bright side of a situation and, you know, maybe kind of see the situation for what they're struggling with, if they're having some problems maybe at home or, you know, maybe they didn't get as many gigs that week. And, you know, if they're playing music to support their family, you know, that's a very, very hard way to have to survive, especially if these guys are touring, you know. So, yeah, I kind of see all sides of the picture, but I definitely can agree with you in that aspect. You know, that's just, it's ego, you know what I mean, in a lot of cases. But met some really wonderful, wonderful, awesome people, very humble, kind people as well. So.
Yep.
And this is a testament to that. I think that that's really amazing. So jumping into positive phenomenon, It's about a guy who was 27 years old and been struggling with faith since he was a child. He had been told that he had high intelligence, but never really thought that God existed. He thought he was just a story. So he goes on to say, I've also been dealing with a bad disorder. One night I reached a breaking point and thought about killing myself. I took a drive out to a cove where it was completely dark. All I could hear were the waves breaking against the rocks and seagulls. I sincerely prayed with much emotion for a sign that what I was worried about and had obsessed about for so many years was not going to happen, and I would be fine. I asked God to show me a shooting star. I waited and watched for over 2 hours. Nothing. I went home hopeless. Just as I was turning the key to open the door to my house, I happened to look up, and what I saw was a bright shooting star blazing right across the middle of the night sky. I mean, it was dead on center, not to be missed. And it was amazing. I thought that was a really cool one too.
That is, you know, those moments where you get a cue. You know, I've had so many of those kind of experiences over the years, and it's definitely proven out to me that something exists outside of me, to say the least. And I've, you know, well, okay, I've got an example. So when I was a young child, I was living in a place with my parents where there was a park across the street. And one day I went outside to go run across the street to the park, and my parents were standing outside talking to some friends of theirs. A car was coming down the road, and out of nowhere, you know, it just sort of popped into existence, for want of a better word, at least to my perceptions, and came barreling down the road. And as I was running across the street, this thing came closer and closer. It was going to hit me. I mean, without any ifs, ands, or buts about it, it was going to slam into me, and this thing was going really fast. Out of nowhere, it was like a flash of light in front of me, and I felt myself lift up and thrown backwards into the waiting arms of my mom, who was just opening up her mouth to start screaming that I was hit by a car. The car slammed on its brakes. The guy got out. He swore that he hit me, you know, because he saw me go flying. And yet I was perfectly fine. No bruising, no injury. The car never touched me. It was within inches, but it never actually touched me. So, something happened there. Something outside of me happened, and it definitely affirmed that I'm here for a reason, to say the least.
Yeah, I think you've actually shared that one with us before, and it's always a testament to faith when we have these little miracles. And that's why this week I chose to do just a very simple kind of a reaffirmation or an affirmation of faith rather than a miraculous healing story. Because at this time, you know, right now, so many of us are struggling with problems, and you hear so many cases of suicide and panic disorders and people who suffer from anxiety, severe depression, considering harming themselves, you know, or actually cutters, things like that. So I thought something simple would be a way just to kind of reinforce that, you know, if you have the faith, you can get through.
Yep.
You'll always be protected, right?
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Seeds of Hope, I've got, this one's really cool too. I love this guy. Like, I want him in my hood. Jeremiah Field and his family recently moved into their new home in Virginia Beach. They live right across the street from the neighborhood playground where children are constantly running around and having fun. One day, Jeremiah's wife called him in a panic. She said that she'd witnessed a drug deal taking place just 20 feet away from their kid at the park. Many of their neighbors had also seen this happening on a regular basis. Jeremiah grew so sick and tired of the alleged drug deals that he decided to take matters into his own hands. First, he called the police, but he also wanted to confront the situation head on. Jeremiah walked across the street and right up to the person he claimed was selling drugs, grabbed him by the backpack, and warned him to never return to the playground again. This is for our kids, and it's not for you to do your drug deals, he told them. But Jeremiah wanted to take things a step further by sending a clearer message, or as clear a message as possible, to his new community. And so there's a video that goes along with it. in which he basically, you know, talks to everybody about wanting to clean up the community and how they should all stick together and things like that. And I thought it was a very, very interesting story. And I give him a lot of credit because, you know, I've done things like that here in my neighborhood. And I've tried to form, you know, like a community watch and programs like that due to some incidences of burglaries, robberies, people being attacked on the streets, things like that. And it's funny to me because nobody ever wants to do it. You know, nobody wants to get involved. They're all, I'm too busy, this or that. Everybody's got an excuse. But then when their house gets robbed or their grandchild gets accosted or there's an incident that personally affects them, all of a sudden they're all in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So for this man to be able to take the initiative, right, and be able to do something about it and want to do something about it on his own and then spread that out to the community, I thought was really amazing.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. Yeah, that's a good thing. I think, you know, more people need to get involved with their neighborhoods and their communities. We've talked about that before, you know, about being aware of who's around you and what their needs are and getting involved. That's something that we really need to get back to. It used to be existent and anymore, you know, it's more a thing of, well, we have to just keep to our own and don't look at anybody, don't talk to anybody, you know, and it's like... That's not how to feel safe, you know?
Well, yeah, I've been saying that for years. You know, you need to be really close with your community. Get to know your neighbors. Get to know the people that live around you. And, you know, when we're younger, we don't think so much about things like that. But when we get older and have children of our own that are playing in these neighborhoods, small children especially, you know, even with the instances of kidnapping and all of the instances of child trafficking that's going on, you know, people are another set of eyes for you. If you've got your back turned to your child at the park and there's another family nearby and they happen to see something suspicious, you know, they're going to tap you on the shoulder, hopefully, and let you know.
Yeah.
That's what it's supposed to be about. That's exactly why we need to work together.
Exactly right.
So,
yep.
Yeah. So let's see. We can go to those crazy kids. This is about a boy that's originally from El Salvador. And at the age of 5 months, he was adopted by two loving parents from the United States. And so here I'm going to tie in kind of my miracle story. So I got it in either way, but just in a different format. Unfortunately, the money, during the 5 months that I was in El Salvador, the country was going through a civil war. Since the orphanage where I lived didn't have the necessities to take proper care of its infants, my parents were sending money to them so I could get that care. Unfortunately, the money was being sent toward weapons for underground criminals. When my parents arrived to take me to my new home, I was very malnourished. I was very sick with various illnesses throughout my childhood because of this. My mom was often taking me to doctor's appointments for things ranging from ear infections to strep throat. I even needed to be hospitalized for asthma. Not much was known about asthma back then. So many doctors couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. My mom would spend the day at the hospital with me, and my dad would come to the hospital at night. They would sit in my hospital room while I slept. My mom found out that she was suffering from diabetes and needed to be on insulin. 24 years later, she found out that her kidneys were failing due to the ravages of this disease. She needed a kidney transplant. Immediately, I told my dad that I would be willing to donate my kidney to her. My parents, being the loving parents that they are, didn't want me to go through a procedure like that. And considering that we are not blood relatives, nor even from the same country, the odds seemed tremendous against a tissue and organ match. Blood relatives offered, but due to their own medical complications, they were able to go through with a donation. Meanwhile, mom's health continued to decline. I kept pursuing my goal to be tested as an organ and tissue donor for her. From July through September, my mom and I went through many tests to see if this would be the case. I prayed to God that I would be a match. Then we learned as a family that my mom and I were a perfect tissue and organ match. We had the surgery. It was a complete success, and there were no complications. And then he goes on to say it had been over a year later since the article was published, and his mom's new kidney is working very well. He says, I like to tell everyone the story not because I want to sound like a hero, but because I want people in the world to know that miracles do happen. I believe God did all the work. I just volunteered. And then, you know, his father, you know, emailed local news stations and stuff like that. And so he got some notoriety out of that. But I thought that was a really touching story. And again, it's a story about kids and then a miracle story combined. So I thought that was really cool.
Exactly. Exactly. You got to sneak those in, don't you?
Yep, absolutely. That's what the show's all about, right? So for her, Furry Heroes, this is about a bird. And I know this was a cool one, too. The bird's name is, I guess you would say it's Bejo, B-E-J-O. Good afternoon. That is how Bejo always greets each guest coming to my house. Even before they knock on the door or press the doorbell, Bejo has greeted them first. Sorry, I forgot to tell you that Bejo is the name of my bird. He's a friendly bird, and to be a little bit more specific, talkative. He's a myna that, like a parrot, always imitates what people say. He's belonged to our family for more than 1 month. My father brought him from an old man who wanted to use the money to buy medicine for his sick son. Bejo cheers our household. All of us like him. He's a very smart bird and very good at imitating whatever we say. He not only imitates what we say word for word, but the way we talk as well, distinctly in a clear voice, hoarse voice or soft. My father forbids us to teach Bejo any bad words, such as nasty words, cursing, abusive words, or mocking. My father reminds us, if the bird knows a certain word, then he will say that over and over, and we'll hear it all the time. He's become a star in our home. We talk about him always among family and friends of ours because of his ability to imitate what we say. We also get annoyed with it doing to have to take care of it. It's my job to clean his cage and feed him, as this was ordered by my father. Only on Sundays does my father participate in cleaning his cage, feeding and bathing him. And our housemaid Jumi's tasks are quite many. I'm responsible for every chore, though, concerning Bejo. The bird gets a mix of rice and any kind of food we provide with it. We also give him sambal, which is a hot rice made of chili, so his voice will be clear. So my father noticed that my chores were unwilling with the bird, is what he goes on to say. You should be grateful for having such a clever bird, he said. It was lucky we bought Bejo. I will help you on Sunday, my father said. I might as well help take the responsibility of caring for Bejo, I thought to myself. I take a stick with me each time I come to the cage because he always wants to peck me. He's a really smart bird. It took him only a few days of my carrying the stick, and now Bejo jumps happily on it whenever I feed him or give him something to drink. One day my father and the whole family went to see my sick grandmother. The reason I had to stay home was that there was nobody else to feed Bejo, and it was the day for testing at my school, so I wasn't allowed to go with him. On that particular afternoon, I was watching TV, and the housemaid ran some errands to a nearby shop to buy some rice. She purposely waited for me to return from school so that there would be somebody at home. While I was busy watching an interesting program on the TV, I heard somebody forcefully open the front gate. At first, I thought that Jumi had come home, but then I saw that there were two young men entering our yard. They walked suspiciously, and I was sure they were thieves. They split up. One went to the garage, and the other one was watching the veranda. My hands and feet were trembling. I was at a loss. Thieves entered my home, and I was alone. I did not know what to do. The kitchen door was forcefully opened. By the time Bejo heard the noise, he automatically cried loudly as usual, "Good afternoon!" There was silence for a moment. "Who is it?" Bejo said, as if it was the voice of our servant, Jumi. I tried to peek at him through the curtain. The thief ran from the kitchen to the veranda to meet his friend. "You said there was only one person and no one else." "But I heard there's someone. Come on, let us run before we're caught," one of them said. Then they ran away. They thought the voice of Bejo was Jumi, the housemaid's voice. Bejo had saved our house from being robbed. I was so thankful he had done a big thing. He saved our house from thieves. When everybody came home that night and brought the good news back that my grandmother was up and around again, I told them the story that Bejo had saved our house from being robbed and how he made those two thieves run away. They all laughed to hear it. What a smart bird. I was proud because I'm the one who gets to feed it. So obviously because of the verbiage and, you know, the rice, they're in a foreign country, but I thought that was a really cool story.
I love stories about birds like that. We had one that was a really, really smart bird as well, and I love that bird. Unfortunately, he didn't live very long, but we had a few of them that were like that too.
We had a parakeet that birds. Played cards.
Oh yeah, that works. That's cool.
Petey, Petey the Parakeet. Yep, my papa would be playing cards with his buddies at the table, and if he'd hold a card up, he'd come and pick up the card and throw it on the face pile on the table. So that was pretty cool. So he could like help win money, but he didn't save us from any robberies or anything like that.
Yeah.
So let's see, we got happiness homework this week. I've done something similar to this one before, but with flu season, bronchitis season, people have pneumonia. There are incidents of mono going around our neighborhood. A lot of the kids in school are coming down with mono. You know, a lot of parents who, especially single parents, you know, when you have children at home and you really, the work policies nowadays are much more stringent, I think, than they used to be as far as calling in sick, depending on the company that you work for. I mean, obviously it was always, you know, something to be frowned upon, but what I found personally is that most recently, because of the amount of people that are looking for jobs, you know, they kind of consider you to be a disposable item nowadays. So calling in sick is something that's typically frowned upon, right? Not many people, not many organizations, at least in this area, support the idea that, you know, your child is sick and you need to stay home with your baby to make your baby better. They expect you to be at work. So donating a vacation or sick day to a person at work who is struggling, whether it be an illness for their child, and maybe they need a day and they're not eligible, or for someone who's struggling with cancer or some other horrible illness. If you have time available and your company allows you to donate, please consider doing so. And if it's the case of a coworker whose shift you can cover, please try and be a little bit more considerate. You know, you may have planned a Friday night out with your friends, but if your coworker's child is sick or they're ill, consider maybe just going in or even splitting the shift with another employee so that the two of you could cover that person's shift, just to be able to help each other out. I think that would be a really nice thing to do, and I think that they'd appreciate it. And then when your time came where maybe you wanted a day off or you were sick, they may trade with you. So I think that as time goes on, because we're so busy and so hectic in our daily lives, you know, we kind of sometimes lose a little bit of sensitivity for what others are going through. I know that in the job market, you know, people are targeted if they're single moms. People are targeted if they're raising children alone. You know, they say it doesn't happen, but it does. In a lot of companies, they're being left out. You know, even if their position, the qualifications are there to be able to do a good job in the position in which they're applying for, they may not be considered if the company finds out that they have children. Now, in our state, you're not supposed to ask any of those questions, but trust me when I tell you, when you go on an interview, they have ways of finding these things out. I've actually heard of cases around here where they send other employees out into the parking lot to your vehicle, to inspect your vehicle, to see if there's a car seat in the vehicle.
They'll also look on things like Facebook and that kind of thing to see if you talk about being a single mom or pictures of your kids and so on and so forth.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but, you know, and it's getting tougher and tougher. I in places like California, of course, which is a very liberal state, you know, you do hear about supportive companies where they have daycares in their offices and you can bring your dog to work and things like that. But here in this region, that's almost non-existent in my experience. And so, you know, we're still kind of in the Stone Ages in regards to being a family, being a single mom. Maybe you've lost a spouse. Maybe your spouse has died, or maybe you've adopted children. I know an instance of a girl friend of mine that her husband's sister died, and they adopted the child, you know. So to be able to hold down a full-time job, try and raise a family, you know, or even just in the instance of someone who's sick, you know, who may be single or, you know, maybe married, but is just has cancer and needs to go through chemotherapy, things like that, to be able to help each other out, I think is really important.
It sure is. Absolutely. We have to be our own support systems, you know?
We do. Hey, you want to go into Comedy Corner?
Why, sure, we can do that. We can do that. You got you got one of my favorite people on as the Comedy Corner this week. So
I know. That's why I picked him.
So here you guys go. A little bit of laughter and yeah, enjoy.
I travel a lot. I stay in a lot of hotels, a lot of buffets. The buffet is basically an answer to the question, well, things are bad. How can we make it worse? How could we design a food-human interaction environment that's basically like driving your dog up to Petco, giving him money, and saying, why don't you go in and get whatever you think you should have? You come back 2 hours later, the dog's wearing a headset, working there as an assistant manager. What is it about the buffet? It does fascinate me. There's something about it that breaks down the mind, reason, judgment, portion, sizes, combinations. Nobody would go into a restaurant and say to the waiter, I want a yogurt parfait, spare ribs, a waffle, 4 cookies, and an egg white omelet. People build these death row last meal wish lists. It's like a working model of all their emotional issues and personal needs, and then they can't decide when they're done, so they just start spinning like a robot vacuum. With kale chips, maple bacon. They bump into the wall, muffin, 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 muffin. They start accosting strangers. Excuse me, where did you get that? What is that? I didn't see that. That's a caramelized chicken leg. I gotta try that. Give me yours. You know where they are. You can get more. Come on! The opposite of the buffet is the Swanson Hungry Man TV dinner. A little taste of prison right there in your own home. Try the Leavenworth chicken or the Alcatraz meatballs this week. Every box of Swanson says Hungry Man on the box. I imagine they had a marketing meeting. They went, all right, we're not going to do anything about the quality. We're agreed upon that. So, which segment of the public should we target that could potentially even choke this pig food down? What about hungry men that are broke, alone, and starving? Taste is the least of their problems. But it's an honest product. It's TV dinner. They're telling you, TV dinner. Stare at the screen and chew. Do not look down. Eyes front, grind it out! I do think Swanson has helped people. It helps people reach their personal life goals, in a way. I had millions of them when I was starting now. When you peel back that plastic cover, you plow through those 4 compartments of hell. By the time you get to that peach cobbler, you go, I gotta make something out of my life. I can't go on like this.
And UFOs. And here's the deal with UFOs. I think you've got a discount about 90% of that stuff right off the top, because my Uncle Cleet swore that they had crop circles in their yard. And then we found out that his wife had called Goodwill and they'd come and got the trampoline and the boat trailer, so mystery solved. But let's say for a minute there really are aliens and they really are coming to Earth, but they didn't want people to know they were coming to Earth. It makes sense that they're only revealing themselves to rednecks. A, because we normally live out in the country, so there's not going to be a lot of witnesses. B, we have no credibility with the media. See, you might believe a scientist from UCLA if he saw one and said, well, they appeared to be bipods from a nitrogen and hydrogen-based environment whose primary respiratory organ was located within their moist, translucent epidermis. As opposed to Cletus in his overalls going, it looked like a giant booger with real skinny legs. And as far as the abductions, think about it. Rednecks don't get to take a lot of vacations. So if somebody comes around and offers to fly us somewhere for free, we're going. And if you're traveling the universe, who better to have on board than a redneck in case your spaceship breaks down? Because we'd have the hood open going, all right, let's see what the problem is. Your nuclear fusion doojiggy sprung a leak. But look here, y'all get me a coat hanger, a Mountain Dew can, and some duct tape. I can get us as far as Uranus.
A redneck can definitely make it happen. A redneck can definitely make it happen.
And then I've been seeing a lot about the alien abductions and things like that, and I'm putting together a show on alien abductions, so I thought that fit perfectly. I thought it was hysterical. And Seinfeld, you know, he's always a winner.
Oh, yeah,
I don't know that I've done Seinfeld yet. Have
no,
I?
We
I
haven't.
I don't think that I have.
Nope, we haven't.
Wow, very cool. So, okay, let's see. We can go into – how much time we got, buddy?
We've got about 26 minutes.
Okay, cool. Let's go into this. Typically, first Sunday of the month would be a healing herb with a tincture, but like we've talked about in previous episodes, the last couple anyway, I've run out of healing herbs for the first Sunday of the month and vital veggies for the third Sunday of the month. So I did choose white pepper, though, because I don't remember ever doing that, and I thought it was a really cool one to do. I cook with it a lot. I love white pepper. There's just something about the difference in taste that really appeals to me. It seems to be more potent, stronger, and it's got amazing health benefits. Pain relieving. All peppers actually contain capsaicin, which is a hot substance. You know, it generates heat, and it's good in pain relief for arthritis aid, weight loss. People have done studies that have shown that it can help to fight the incidence of cancer or possibly help in the curing of cancer.
And also for heart attack.
Go ahead.
For a heart attack, one of the recommendations by a lot of people is to, if you feel like you're having a heart attack or something like that, grab a bottle of hot sauce, put a bunch of it right underneath your tongue, and it, like, stops what's happening. You know, it tramples it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if that's got white pepper in it, though, the hot sauce.
It's the capsaicin that does it. So any of the pepper types would have it in it.
Cool. And let's see, headache relief. A lot of people use it to help with their headaches.
Yeah.
It can cure a cough, a decongestant. It can prevent stomach ulcers. It's good for a lot of things. And like I said, me personally, I like the flavor of it better. It just seems to be more potent. Even though all it is a black peppercorn where it's been stripped, right? It's pretty much the same thing. It's got a distinctly different flavor, and I really like it. So the only tincture that I could find for white pepper was to mix it in vodka as part of a mixed drink. So I figured, okay, well, we'll go with that one. But I did find some really cool recipes for dry rubs, and I do put it in some of my dry rubs as well. So I thought we'd try that for this week. This one particularly is for beef, for steak. You take 2 tablespoons of kosher salt, 1 tablespoon of brown sugar, 1 tablespoon of cracked pepper, or white pepper is what I would use, 1 tablespoon of coriander, 1 tablespoon of smoked paprika, 1 tablespoon chili powder, 1 tablespoon garlic powder, 1 tablespoon of onion powder, and 2 teaspoons of mustard powder. And I, to be honest with you, I leave that out, and I'll use something else as a substitute, maybe some turmeric, especially if, you know, we have colds in the house. When I do a rub, I'll put turmeric. I put turmeric on just about everything that I cook anyway. For the same reason, it's got great anti-inflammatory properties, and it's good for the prevention of cancer, things like that. So all you do is just take all of those ingredients and mix them all together in a bowl, and then you just rub it on the meat that you're going to cook, whether it be grilling or putting it in the oven or frying it on the stove. And it's a really good combination of flavors, I think. You've got the sweetness in there. You've got the tartness. You've got a little bit of a bite and a smoky flavor as well. So try it. I think it's something that you might like. I know you like to grill out a lot in the summertime.
Oh, yeah.
So it's really easy to throw it together. And dry rubs are so – and they store forever. You know, once you mix them and you put them in a little jar, they're good for a really long time.
Yeah, they are.
You can even use it the next season, right, if you have some left over. So that was my Ealing herb, Ealing, as my boy would say, because he can't say healing.
Yeah, you know,
my Ealing herb.
I've used white pepper before. It is really good. And yes, there is definitely a distinction in taste between that and black pepper. It's got a lighter flavor to it, but at the same time, it seems a little bit more dancey on the tongue, I guess, is a good way to put it. It's really good. I like white pepper a lot.
Yeah, and when you're trying to create a more spicy dish, if you use that instead of the black, it'll give it just that little bit more of a bite. It's just something about it. I love it. I use it a lot.
Black pepper tends to have, just for lack of a better word, a really kind of dark, musky sort of a taste to it on the tongue, you know, whereas the white pepper has more of a almost citrusy type of a flavor to it. It's really good. I like it.
So there you go. Like I said, maybe next time we'll do dog treats or something. I'm running out of ideas. Actually, I do have a fruit we haven't chosen yet to use for the third Sunday of the month. So, and it'll be a really cool one too, I promise you. But you know, I got something really cool the other day I wanted to tell you about kind of quickly. I go to, there's a market that's got Asian food. And so, like, I'll buy rice noodles and things like that. A lot of the products, not all of them, but a lot of them are non-GMO there. And so, you know, when I want to do, like, some homemade Chinese dishes or even some chicken soup, you know, if one of the kids are sick and I want to make a batch up of that and put some in the freezer for when they come home or mail it to them or whatever, I really like this market because it's got cool stuff that some things I've never even seen before. So I like to experiment. And I found something called honey crystals. Have you ever seen those?
I have indeed, yes.
You, what? No, you haven't.
I have.
Get out. It's, no, it,
I
haven't.
Swear I have. There was a...
No, you have not.
There was a co-op.
Are you kidding me?
No, there was a co-op that we had here in town, and they had them there. I'd never tried them, but they had them there.
Okay, so basically, it's, you know, it's the cute little teddy bear jar. But it's like 12 ounces. So it's bigger than what you typically find nowadays in the store for honey. I mean, we used to get these giant grizzly bear looking containers. Right now that everything's shrunk, they've downsized the packaging for the products and then increased the prices, right? Like we wouldn't notice that 24 ounce box of cereal is now like 8 ounces and it's
right.
Three times more, right?
Yep.
But it's a really decent-sized bear, and I love the container because it's a bear, right? It's really cute. And it's called Honey Crystals, and it looks like it looks like brown sugar, but it's very granular. It's really weird to describe. It doesn't look like sugar, but it's like a tan color, and it's granular. And basically, it's dried honey. So, I mean, we know from studies that honey – can last for thousands of years, right? They found it in Egyptian tombs, right? That's still good, right?
Indeed, and it's
come
one
on,
of the,
Ira, don't make me say right again.
It's,
you know,
it's one of
something.
The. It's
are you
one
on
the,
delay again? What are you doing?
Nope, it's all. It's actually one of the only substances as well that's very hypoallergenic as far as a food product goes. Like almost nobody is allergic to it.
Yeah, and you know, I use it locally. With cinnamon and for my allergies, you know, to take local organic honey. There was a while that I developed a sensitivity to it, and then I went off it for a while and went back on. I'm not having any problems since then.
Yeah.
But, you know, as a substitute for sugar products, you know, it's a very natural. It's really good for you. So, yeah, I picked up this jar, and I asked the lady at the counter, and that's basically it. It's dried honey. So I thought I would use this when I'm looking for a sweetener. I don't eat a lot of sugar typically, but I do like honey, especially if I'm making like a hot honey and lemon tea for a sore throat or something like that. So I thought I'd try it and see. Do you use less than you would?
Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't take as much.
Liquid honey is it?
It doesn't take as much because it's more of a concentrate version of it, so you don't have to use quite as much. Have you ever tried? Here's a question for you. Have you ever tried chocolate that's sweetened with honey instead of sugar, or the high fructose corn syrups and all that kind of stuff?
Well, I stay away from the high fructose corn syrup as much as humanly possible.
Yeah, me too.
I read the ingredients on everything I buy, and pretty much everything I make is homemade. So,
yeah.
But as far as honey for chocolate, I can't really say that I have ever tried that.
Yeah, I haven't either. I don't think I've ever seen honey chocolate that's sweetened with honey. I wonder how that would be.
What's a trick question? Are you kidding me? It's probably something with the chemical compounds in it they can't fabricate.
It could be.
You know, the chocolate, maybe to get it hard enough to be able to mold it into a bar or something like that. Or maybe it's too thick of an ingredient in its natural state to be able to mix with the other components of chocolate.
That could be.
But, I mean, I don't know. Like cocoa powder, you might be able to, you know, just take some cocoa powder and mix it with honey and see how that tastes if you wanted to make, like, maybe an alternative to homemade fudge or something like that. I make a lot of fudge around the holiday time.
Yeah.
And you know, that might be something.
I'll have to give it a shot and see what happens. Maybe you can find us a recipe
for
that.
For honey chocolate. You want me to find a recipe that doesn't exist. So you want me to create a recipe. Thanks, buddy.
Why, sure.
But anyway, I was so excited, you know, because, like, you know, that was one of the things I liked as a kid, is when my parents would buy the little jars of honey with the, you know, the little bears. I thought they were cute. And this is a dry powder, so when it's empty, I don't have to, like, soak it for 2 days to get the residual honey out of there. I can use it to put my dry herbs and stuff like that in it. I thought it was really cool. So honey crystals, there's another one for you, folks. If you haven't tried it, this was about $3.75 for a 12-ounce bottle. And I found it at an Asian food market. And that's actually the title of the place, Asia Food Market. So give it a shot. See how it works for you. The thing that I like about it, too, is when I buy honey, I typically buy, like, those really huge jars. You know, they're, like, the size of, you know, a gallon of milk, kind of. And this was, you know, compact, so it's easier for me to be able to store in my pantry. It takes up less space, right? And it's a plastic jar, too, whereas honey usually, in the bigger jars anyway, comes in a glass container. So if I were to be able or wanting to move it, you know, I don't have to worry about the container breaking.
Right.
So, yeah, I think it's really cool. You know, I don't get excited about much, but when I see something cool like that, it doesn't take much to make me happy. It really doesn't. $3.75. I'm a cheap date.
Yep.
So, okay, let's... You weren't supposed to agree with me.
Oh,
Ira.
I'm sorry.
But yeah, no, I totally am. Little things make me happy. So positive affirmations in scripture. I engage in work that impacts this world positively. The reason that I chose this is because, again, going back to the whole workplace, you know, droning that I was doing earlier about, you know, feeling sorry for people that are sick and, you know, considering trying to help out a fellow coworker. I'm not as eloquent as I should be today because I am actually starting to feel pain. The season's coming upon me, and I didn't get a lot of sleep. So forgive my drivel earlier. But I've had a lot of incidents of people emailing me for problems in the workplace. They feel like they're not making a difference, or they wish that they could make some sort of career shift so that they could actually do more things to help humanity. And so I thought that this one would be a good one. Just write it down, put it on your phone, say it over and over, however you'd like to do it. But I engage in work that impacts this world positively. And truly, it really doesn't matter what you do for a career. You may think that you're not making a difference in someone's life, but you absolutely are. Even if you're a fast food server at one of those chains that I loathe, you know, the way that you greet people, just giving people a simple smile when they walk in the door, maybe chatting with them a minute, taking the time out to give the person that you're waiting on a little bit of extra attention, when, you know, that may be any number of situational problems may be, you know, in that person's mind when they come in the door. It could be their only meal of the day. They could be scraping up change to be able to afford something to feed themselves and their family. Maybe they've lost power and they've got to go for fast food because they don't have any electricity right now, which was a situation we had here regionally in this area. A lot of people were out power just this past week. You know, anything like that. If you work in an office, you know, greet the postal worker who may have been struggling. It may be a really cold day outside, rainy, nasty, and this guy or woman is out there, you know, 8 hours a day huffing it through the streets. Maybe they need a little pick-me-up. It doesn't matter what you do. You can always find ways to be positive and to, you know, just show your fellow humans that you care about them and that they're not alone. So for King James Version, I chose Matthew 5:16. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. So there you go. That's my positive affirmations and scripture for the week. What do you think?
I like it. I'm in agreement with you. You know, I always say, you know, you never know what a person's going through, and you might be making all of the difference in their life at that moment in time if you give them a smile. You know, somebody that's in front of you in line at the gas station or something, you know, give them a smile or say hey or, you know, whatever. I mean, you never know what that person's going through. You could be making their day completely. And maybe even saving their life. Who knows? You never know what difference you're making. On the flip side of that too, the when you put out the negativity, you know, you might actually be making that person's day worse, even just by encountering you for 30 seconds worth of time. You could be making that person's day completely worse, and they, you know, go through hell because of what you said or did. You know, it really makes a difference.
Absolutely. How many times have we gone someplace and we've had somebody at the register or at the drive-up window, you know, at a bank or one of those places where you get takeout, and, you know, they're not in the brightest of moods. And I always try and kind of figure where they're coming from, too. You know, they may have had a line of 15 people. The person before them may have yelled at them. You don't know what's going on in their head either. And so at that time, I kind of try and switch it around and give them something to maybe make them smile or laugh. And if they're still miserable, you know, and I've made an effort, well, then that's their free will choice, you
right.
know.
Yep.
They'll work it out. Hopefully they'll work it out on their own. And, you know, throughout the course of the day, by the time the day ends, they'll be in a little bit better mood. Or, you know, if they're just a miserable person and they're unhappy with themselves and their situation, you know, you're not going to change that. But maybe just that small word of kindness or that, you know, that little joke that you tell them may just brighten their day and change their outlook,
yep.
you know?
Exactly.
I think it's worth a shot. So, and the incidents with the change, that happened. I was someplace and there was a woman and she was scraping, you know, to be able to pay for her goods with change. And, you know, standing behind her, I don't typically carry a lot of cash on me. But, you know, I offered to give her what I had and, as it turned out, she had enough to pay for her order, and she, you know, thanked me but refused, you know. But at least she knew that somebody was there. And then the week before, I was in the grocery store, and I didn't have change. And I was, like, 49 cents short, and this gentleman behind me just, like, whipped it out of his pocket. And I'm like, no, dude, really? And he's like, no, let me take care of it. And so I told him, you know, well, walk with me out to my car. I have a ton of change in my console, you know, which all of the neighborhood robbers know. So I gotta lock my doors. But like, you know, I had a bunch of loose change in there for like throughway tolls and stuff like that for when I'm traveling. And I offered to give him the money back out of my console, and he wouldn't take it. And, you know, I thought about that guy the rest of the day and how sweet that was. A little gesture like that just made my whole day, you know?
Exactly. And it didn't take much for him, you know?
No, it really didn't. You know, and he was just, you could tell he was a really good person, you know, and if we all did little things like that every day, I think it would make a huge difference. And again, you know, don't think that what you're doing does not affect many, many people in the course of the day. We're a ripple in the pond, you know, so.
Exactly.
And you're being recognized for that stuff, you know, really. God sees everything, you know, he sees whether you're turning a blind eye to that person in front of you online that doesn't have that extra $1.50 and you have, you know, $15 in cash in your wallet, right? So, you know, look at it that way. So things my dad says. We were having a conversation earlier this week. He called me up, and he's doing some changes. He's making some changes, and long story short, without giving away too much of his private information, he's looking at making a move. And it's not far, and it's going to be like kind of a temporary residence type of thing. But, you know, he's been waiting for this deal kind of to go through for a while. And he, you know, normally he worries, I have to admit, he's somebody that worries more about his family than himself. You know, he'll worry about the grandchildren. He'll worry about his wife. He'll worry about us, you know, the kids. But he always self-sacrifices, right? So this is something that he's really excited at the prospect for. And typically, you know, in a normal situation, if it were regarding his grandchildren, let's say, he would be, like, worried about it. But because it's for himself, he's kind of got the attitude like, oh, it'll happen, it'll go through, no news is good news. Nulla nova, buona nova. So no news is good news. Try and focus on that for a minute if you can. A lot of us get so stressed out and excited and worry about things that potentially are never going to happen. You know, I try and see the best in a situation, but recently what I've discovered is just because so many people are going through financial hardships and personal struggles, right? And, you know, sometimes it can affect our moods and affect our mindset, and we tend to think negatively rather than positively. So if we're waiting for an answer, or we're waiting for a piece of mail to arrive, or we're waiting to get word on an approval, let's say on a bank loan or, you know, a realty loan or something like that, don't stress about it. Think positively. If you haven't heard anything, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a bad thing. It may just be taking a little bit longer. Don't write off that circumstance until you truly know the details in which the situation lies, right?
There's a phrase that I use that I think fits in with what you're trying to say here. Worry doesn't really do a lot of good. It's really, when it comes down to it, a waste of energy. If there's something that's going on that you need to worry about, and you can do something to change it, then do the thing that needs to be done to change it, and you'll stop worrying. And if it's something that you're worrying about that you can do nothing about or that you can't change, stop worrying about it, because there's nothing you can do anyways. It's just a waste of energy. You see what I mean? Worry is such a disempowering energetic force. You know, it really is. It will do a lot to damage your life and damage your body, you know, even when that stress is there, especially when it's there for not really anything that you can control, you know?
Absolutely. And you hit it on the head. That was the next words out of my mouth, is how many times have you heard me say negativity creates disease in the body?
It does.
And if you have faith, you know, to know that things are going to work out, and not to spend that extra energy worrying about things that you don't really have an answer for yet, and trying to be more positive about it and have faith that things will work out. You know, they may not work out the way that you wanted them to, but they will work out. And I think that's important for us to remember. We're all a victim of that. You know, we get ourselves involved in situations in our lives, or things happen where things don't work out exactly as we hoped they would. But that doesn't mean that there wasn't another reason for that, you know. Maybe there's something better coming down the line. Maybe it's going to take a little bit longer to resolve the situation in greater ways than you had anticipated. So I think it's important to remember, no news is good news. Nulla nova, buona nova. So, you know, keep that in mind. Don't stress about what hasn't happened yet. Try and maintain as positive an outlook as you can. And, you know, just have faith. I think that's the most important thing, is exactly to have faith and know that everything will work out. Okay, just in closing tonight, I know that the show will air on Sunday, and we're hearing a lot of things politically regarding, you know, the anticipated attacks today with Antifa, and a lot of violence happening on our planet, and a lot of people who are collating to create violence and dissonance in our society today. I just would like for everybody to know that, you know, please just have faith, pray in your higher power, take care of each other. You know, if your children or you are anticipating going to a crowded area, keep your head up, look to see what's going on around you. If you see you know, an instance of a group gathering or something that just doesn't feel right to you, go the other way. And I'm not telling you to live in fear, because fear is what they're trying to promote here. Fear is what their goal is, to have us all be afraid as citizens to be able to walk the street in anticipation of what may happen to us. Don't be fearful, but don't put yourself in a situation that could be potentially dangerous for yourself or your children either. And know that we will overcome this. You know, this is just, it's for, I think, attention more than anything else. I think it's to instill a feeling of fear in the American people. I feel that that's their greatest tactic, and that's what they're preying on right now. And so just have faith and know that everything's going to be okay. Keep yourselves and your family safe. Look out for each other, and God bless all of you.
I don't disagree at all. You know, that's such an important statement, and I'm glad that you made it. I've seen so many people that have been worrying and, you know, concerned and all that, and I'm just like, stop, it's okay. You know, everything's going to be okay. Everything is in God's hands. It always is.
Look, I'm gonna go out and I'm going to work, and I'm going to do my spiritual work, and I'm going to help people, and I'm going to do my job, and I'm not going to let anybody prohibit me from that. I'm not going to I'm not going to stay in my house and live like a hermit just because of, you know, what is anticipated to happen. I refuse to let that get to me, right?
Exactly.
But I'm not going to be stupid about it either. You know, I'm going to be prepared, and I'm going to take precautions, right? But I'm not going to let it bother me. And I think that's, like I said, that's the greatest tactic that these groups have is fear, right? So, you know, I'm not going to be that way. I'm not going to live my life that way. And I would hope that all of you wouldn't either.
There you go. Love it.
So there you go. That's another one down in the books. And I'm feeling some pain. I'm kind of tired. Ira's having computer difficulties. So with that, we'll call it a night. And thanks for listening. We'll see you all in a couple of weeks. Bye, Ira. Thank you.
Sounds great, Maggie. Thank you for all that you do. I love you to death. And everybody out there, have a safe time. Have a safe week. And we will talk to you again soon. Thanks for listening. Thank you.